Micro Europa.
Sounds.
Moderne. Fiche.
Terrific.
Micro Europa.
Sounds.
Comme moi.
Comme eu.
Like me.
Micro Europa.
Bringing young Europe together.
Hello and welcome back to Radio Micro Europa on the Wüstewelle 96.6. My name is Chiara Fabienne Gehrig, and today we are talking about climate change. More precisely, we are talking about the topic of water. One might wonder how you could fill a whole radio program with such a basic topic. But I hope that in the end of this show you can see that water is not basic at all, but a part of our everyday life and culture. We, from the climate editorial team, were more than happy to be part of a university course hosted by Inka Koch and Solmaz Moeder from the Global Awareness Education team, in which students were able to talk and reflect about their own perspective, knowledge and influence on water, and create the fabulous audio pieces that you will hear today. Let's start with an emotional piece that reflects on the cultural heritage of water in Peru. It is a story of a winged serpent that brought back water to Peru in the age of heroes. Now, Noelia Ortiz wonders, who will save the place of life from the next drought?
This is my story. It's a story of life and doom. A story about water that came from the mountains of what is now known as Peru. In the olden times, there was a drought. The fields, the rivers, and all the tears had dried. It was believed the end of times were upon us. There was only dust and death. It is known. But up in the mountains, there was a flower, which men call Cantu. This flower grew at high elevation, and it was the last one left alive. On its last day, as it perished, the Cantu flower opened its petals to become a unique type of hummingbird, so it could reach and make a plea to the Huayta Payana, the father of mountains and lagoons. The hummingbird flew until the air was so thin that it could fly no more, and at the end of its life, begged,
"Taita, father, save us."
The Huayta Payana grieved the loss. It cried, and its tears fell to the empty Huaca Cocha lagoon. And the earth rumbled, and from its depths a winged serpent arose. And they called it Amaru. After waking up from its slumber, the Amaru flapped its wings to command the sky to rain, and the earth was filled with life again. It is known. When I was a child, my father told me this story belonged to the age of heroes. Water made the age of men possible, and our world became a place everyone could thrive in. Unfortunately, our time might come to an end soon. In the last 50 years, the glaciers in Peru have lost 50% of their ice. Lagoons are drying up in the Andes mountain range, and the cycle of doom is upon us again. We've tried restoring the Huayta Payana's slopes, preventing its erosion and limiting access in the hopes of reforestation. Alas, it is not enough. This time, the Father of Mountains might not hear our plea. There aren't many hummingbirds left now. One by one, lagoons in Peru are turning to dust. This is my story. It's a story of life and doom. But it is not only mine. Far and wide, life is perishing in the known world. And all over, the wise ones, who we used to call shamans, are now scientists. these wise ones must go deeper into the mountains so our life might be spared. These wise ones are only a few, but as the Cantu flower and my hummingbird, they refuse to stand defeated because they know the mountains and their glaciers are fathers to us all. They know our lands will dry. They know the winged serpent might not rise again. They know my story is your story too. They know this might be our last story. And when the dust settles, they know this is how the age of men will end. It is known. But a pact between Peru's National Water Authority and the German Aerospace Center was made to send wise people to measure the Huacracocha Lagoon's depth. They embarked on a journey to unveil its secrets. Amid peaks where the heavens and earth parade, these wise people arrived to meet and pay their respects to the Father of Mountains. With models adapted and software refined, they gather water samples to study what their satellites saw to bring new insights to this sacred place. And with their findings, we hope to enter a new age, the age of our rebirth. It is known.
Micro Europa.
Bringing young Europe together.
Weak and drunken hearts, guess the loneliness came knocking. No one
What an homage to the importance of the scientific work by Noelia Ortiz. The song you were just listening to was People Help the People by Birdie. As you could see, water is a part of our identity as human beings. Which brings us to the topic of our next audio piece. Tabitha Singer tells the story of two interconnected journeys. The journey of the Rhine from the Swiss Alps to the North Sea, crossing and forming country borders. And her own journey of life, filled with memories touched by the Rhine. Enjoy!
River of memories. The Rhine, a silent witness of my life. Always there, constant and non-judgmental. This is a story of two interconnected journeys. The journey of the Rhine from the Swiss Alps to the North Sea, crossing and forming country borders. And my journey, filled with memories touched by the Rhine. The Rhine connects Lake Constance and the city where I studied, floats by the place where my brother lives, moving further by my hometown, defining the borders between Germany and France, witnessing ever more moments in my life before finally moving to the Netherlands, emptying into the North Sea, leaving me at the shore. The Rhine's catchment area spans 9 countries, where I am only one of over 60 million inhabitants. It is impossible to tell the story of the Rhine without telling the story of those people. For me, it's near impossible to tell my story without mentioning the Rhine. Let us go on a little journey. First stop, Lake Constance. This is where my tap water is coming from. It travels here through pipes, is treated by the waterworks, and then distributed to my household and many more. Every morning, I move to the tap to fill my water bottle back up, get ready for the day. A piece of the Rhine moves with me through the day. Lake Constance also holds a more personal connection. I lived on its shores for 4 years during my bachelor's degree. While there, I studied, fell in and out of love, laughed and cried with friends, and had the water there beside me, witnessing all these moments. Any difficult talk, any moment to think would mean taking a stroll along the lake shore. But mainly, I remember sweet summers at Lake Constance, where water means hanging out with friends, cooling your feet off in the lake, or drifting down the stream of the Rhine. Let's follow. Moving further upstream and down a spectacular Schaffhausen waterfall, and even further up to Basel, where my brother lives. His birthday, celebrated in the summertime, again have included the Rhine for many years. Laughing on stand-up paddle boards and cooling off in the water. The Rhine, just like life, has had its ups and downs. A major fire in one of Basel's factories on November 1st in 1986 brought a major down. The water of the Rhine turned red as tons of toxic chemicals were released into it. While the locals were alerted to stay indoors for safety, the Rhine couldn't run away. It kept flowing in the foul smell of rotten eggs and burning rubber, without fish and people swimming in it for a long time. That was a wake-up call for the inhabitants of the Rhine's catchment area. The International Commission for the Protection of the Rhine drew up an action plan. All the countries in the catchment area started to work together for cleaner water and the biological repair of the Rhine's ecosystem. The fish and the people returned to the Rhine. Humans and their impact on the water, the good and the bad. Moving further and leaving Basel behind, the Rhine flows just a kilometer west of my hometown. Here in the summertime, these big water sprinklers move across the cornfields, filled with the same water as my water bottle. When they are on, it's always a game when walking my dog to move just so that the sprinklers don't hit us. The artificial rain moving in circles. This summer, it took a while before they came on, because it was such a rainy June and July. A blessing and a curse. Some regions came to life with all the water falling from the sky. Just a few hundred kilometers further, but still within the Rhine's catchment area, villages were flooded, cars washed through the streets, cellars ruined, livelihoods destroyed. The water and its impact on us humans, the good and the bad. No matter whether the water was wanted or feared, it all eventually seeped into the ground and returned to the Rhine. Our last stop, the North Sea. This is where me and the Rhine part ways. The end point of this journey brings me to a vacation in the Netherlands. My dog running on the beach trying to catch the waves, while me and two friends who also studied with me in Constance stand to watch. All over the beaches, warning signs and large extirators can be found, explaining the dangers of the North Sea, modifying the dunes so that the land can hold off a little while longer against rising sea levels. The Dutch in their constant fight against the water masses trying to pull their country under. My memories connected to the Rhine are mostly of sunny summers spent with friends and family by the water, where the Rhine is always there as a kind companion. But the river's memories also include less harmonious stories of the Rhine and the 60 million inhabitants living in its catchment area. One catchment area that connects me to all these people, spanning country borders. We might not speak the same language, yet we drink the same water and have the rain on our heads flow towards the same river. Therefore, we need to care for it together. The International Commission for the Protection of the Rhine includes us all. The Rhine needs us, and we need the Rhine.
Water Under the Bridge by Adele. You are still listening to Radio Micro Europa on the Wüstewelle 96.6. The topic of this radio program today is water and its stories around the world from the Rhine to the highlands of Peru. For matter of fact, it is clear that drinkable water should not be taken for granted. Therefore, Xongi Mazia tells us a tale of survival and hope. She links her own story of growing up in an African village to the broader global water crisis.
Hi, this is a story about the dimensions of an African child in the village, a tale of hope and survival. A single drop of water begins its journey high in the dusty lands of Mbalati in Limpopo, South Africa. Glistening under the morning sun, it melts and joins a trickling stream and winds its way down the mountainside, gaining strength as it merges with others to form a rushing river. This river sustains communities, irrigates fields, and quenches the thirst of countless creatures along its path. In this old, weary village, the river is lifeblood. It is also at this very village that I wake up before dawn each day to fetch water for my family. The journey is long and treacherous, roughly 2 hours each way along uneven paths. The water is usually brown and murky, but it is all we have. My village is one of the many facing the harsh reality of water scarcity. Globally, 771 million people lack access to safe drinking water, according to water.org. My family, like millions of others, is aware of the dangers of unclean water, like diseases such as cholera, dysentery, and typhoid. Every sip is a gamble, but we have no choice. My greatest dream is to become a university lecturer, but with this daily water collection, I am always left with little time for school. This makes me wonder, at often, why is something so vital very difficult to find? One day, visitors arrive in my village. They are engineers and volunteers from a non-profit organization focused on clean water solutions. They bring with them a simple yet powerful tool. It is a gravity-fed water filtration system. The system uses sand, gravel, and charcoal to filter out contaminants. It is powered entirely by gravity, meaning that no electricity is needed. The volunteers work with the villagers to set it up near the river. They teach them how to maintain it, ensuring its sustainability. Within days, the transformation is profound. With this development, my family no longer needs to boil water in order to make it drinkable, saving us precious firewood and time. I can now attend school regularly, and my dream of lecturing is reignited. My story is not unique, but it highlights a broader crisis. The World Health Organization reports that 80% of illnesses in developing countries are waterborne. Yet, solutions like the filtration system are proof that change is possible. Clean water not only reduces diseases, but it restores dignity and it opens doors to education and economic opportunities. My village has become a beacon of hope in the region. Other communities hear of the success and adopt similar systems. The once dirty river transforms from a source of sickness to a symbol of renewal. Whenever I visit home, I stand by the riverbank, watching the children play in the clean water. I smile, knowing that every drop of water carries a story of survival and resilience. In the end, water is more than a resource. I feel it is life itself. And every drop saved, cleaned, and shed carries the promise of a better tomorrow. Thank you.
Pulling me deep, I can't get no sleep. And I'm rolling by the river, trying to get back on my feet. Goddamn, you woke up the ghost in me. And now I need a minute to breathe, 'cause I'm losing my self-control.
That's right, I'm wearing my heart on my sleeve. That don't mean that I want it to bleed, but I'm walking down your road.
Ooh, I'll be alright. I've been thinking that I'm alright. Now I'm realizing I'm blind, and I need to open my eyes. I'll be alright. I've been swimming against the tide. Oh, I have.
Now I feel it pulling me deep. I can't get no sleep, and I'm rolling by the river, trying to get back on my feet. And you still cut me deep, and I'm on my knees, and I'm rolling by the river, trying to get back on my feet.
You still cut me deep, I can't get no sleep, and I'm rolling by the river, trying to get back on my feet. You still cut me deep, 'cause I'm on my knees, and I'm rolling by the river, trying to get back on my feet. Silence comes and goes. Was it something that I said that let you get inside your head, that made you want me, that made you cold?
Oh, me, oh my.
Europa.
Sounds
interesting.
Interessant.
Interessant.
Interesting.
We are sticking with the theme of water-related challenges, but are now turning our attention to a cynical attitude towards humanity. In the next piece, Torben Grorock and Gabriel Bretzinger imagine a future without humanity for a second. This brings them in the position to passionately discuss whether the humans should get another chance on facing the global water crisis or not. To which conclusion will they get?
Look at this mess. The humans have polluted their waters. They threw batteries and their weird plastic into the ocean and were making fun of it. They said it would charge the eels. How stupid. It was the right decision to get rid of them.
Don't you think this is a little drastic to eradicate a whole species?
Just look how the world is healing. Rivers meander again. Water bodies detoxicate themselves chemically via microorganisms and natural processes like adsorption in the sedimentary bodies. There are novel entities, artificial materials like microplastics and radioactive material, disintegrate and vanish over a timescale of several thousands to millions of years. The land and water aren't destroyed by their hands anymore. Forests regrow and nature takes its place back.
But the adsorbed materials will stay in the sediments for longer timescales. If eroded, it will destroy nature again, and the nuclear waste will also still radiate, but without shielding barriers. Also, natural catastrophes happen. Nobody looks after the dams anymore. Just look how many animals and plants die by the breakage of this one.
Those animals and plants wouldn't have died if the humans hadn't built the dam in the first place. All of it wouldn't have happened.
And what about the polluted waters? Grey water, as they called it. What is going to happen with that?
Over time, all of this pollution will vanish, as I described a minute ago. It wouldn't also be polluted if the humans weren't there in the first place. Then it would still be a part of the natural water cycle. like their so-called green and blue water, where they differentiated between where the water is stored, either in the vegetation or water bodies, like rivers and lakes.
But the humans try to tackle that pollution. Don't you see their filters and sewage treatment plants?
But since when are they doing this? Exactly, they just do it since their health is at stake, and only after it affected most of them. Developing countries don't mean shit for the rich industrialized countries. They would not tidy up the mess they created for nature itself, even though she provides essential ecosystem services.
But if there is no one taking care of the garbage, then there will be problems in the natural regeneration. Like, look into the chemicals inside the batteries we talked about before. These chemicals like lithium, cobalt, or lead, these are endocrine disruptors which can harm the environment and living organisms strongly. There are so many of them that they wanted to recycle, and now, since you have eradicated them, all of these will end up in nature.
Over the course of the next thousands to million years, all of this will resolve itself. Nature will eventually evolve organisms who feed on that garbage. Nature will fill all niches. Life finds a way, to quote one of their movies. As elephant calves, they are born without tusks due to the poaching activities. The species evolved in response to environmental pressures and adapted to it.
But all of this garbage that pollutes the river will eventually end up in the oceans and destroy the environment for the organisms there.
Not everything will end up in the oceans.
Here, look at the BASF Mannheim. It is a chemical plant right next to the river. All these chemicals will leak into the Rhine River and reach the Northern Sea.
That's only a short-term event. Humans managed in their short lifespan of 100,000 years to destroy their environment more prolonged than any other organism did in the 4.5 billion years of Earth's history.
Is this reason enough to get rid of the entire species? Just look at what humans also have accomplished. They were on other celestial bodies and have sent their technology far into space, outside of their own solar system. They would have eventually managed to stop climate change via their renewable energies like wind and solar generators, and also they would have been able to stop glacial melt in the next decade. You have seen the work of their scientists. They even invented mechanisms for capturing CO2. Think about it, what this could mean for the future.
Disputes between different countries would have hindered this process. Have you seen the beautiful Alps? There are many rivers, and humans of different countries couldn't agree on how to manage them environmentally, just because their ancestors divided the land by imaginary lines they called borders. Just because they were greedy and wanted to own the land. These borders did nothing but start disputes, which may have ended in the wars which destroyed both water and land. Just look at the dispute between Greece and Turkey about the river Evros. There is military presence and tensions because they can't agree about water usage.
You are right with this aspect. But couldn't we too have solved their problems rather than getting rid of them all?
We aren't their nanny. The humans possessed free will and decided to go against their environment. Just look at the least developed countries. Children drink polluted waters and die or have to buy expensive drinking water from the rich. There is no empathy, just greed. They even invented the money to which they were their own slave. They prefer money over protecting their environment.
I still don't like erasing an entire species.
Let's go to the Rhine River. It's been 5,000 years. Look at everything. This city was called Mainz. Look at how nature took everything back. The whole infrastructure is destroyed. Those lonely ruins are remnants of once alive city. I don't see any of these ruins in the water of the river. The water looks way clearer than it used to, and the natural flow of the river is back.
Let's keep going. The next city will show something in favor of my opinion.
This is Bonn. Now it's been 10,000 years since their disappearance. Do you see any remnants from them other than their damn plastics? I only see a healthy forest. Look over there, is even a new flowing river.
Let's go further to the ocean. I'm sure there's nothing more that you can show me that will change my mind.
Now it has been 15,000 years. This was once called the Netherlands. Do you see land? I only see a shallow ocean. That is the product of climate change. The ocean swallowed the whole land. There are no remnants of human life. Do you think they could have stopped this? I think if it weren't for us, more land would have been swallowed by the ocean. Look over there. Even 15,000 years since their disappearance, are their only remnants their damn plastics and the glass particles.
You see, I really think humanity could gather also this and will find a way to get rid of all this garbage as well. Okay, I have an idea. Let me snap humanity and time back before you snap them away. Let's take a look at how humanity will face these problems. You will see they will manage to save nature.
Ocean Eyes by Billie Eilish. You're listening to Radio Micro Europa on the Wüstewelle 96.6. In the resuming time of this radio program, we change our perspective. Helen Burkhardt invites us to see the ocean and the coastline through the eyes of a small droplet. Her story focuses on the connection between humans and the sea, from enjoying the water as a refreshment in the summer to littering the ocean with plastic. Which steps can we as humans take to care for the water around us?
Down at the coast, a curious little water drop swam contently with his friends in the Atlantic. They enjoyed the sun over their heads and the crystal clear blue under their feet. It was a beautiful summer day, not a single cloud in the sky, and everything seemed perfect. Eyes closed, humming a melody. He held his little face into the summer sun, but from one moment to the next, the sun was gone. The little water drop opened his eyes, blinking confusedly about where the light had gone so suddenly. He saw the shadow of the surfboard just in time to swim aside as fast as his little hands and feet could manage, and with one loud splash, the surf had chipped his board onto the water surface. The little drop was mesmerized, watching him gratefully dance on each wave the ocean sent him as a gift. This view aligned perfectly with tales the little drop had heard about everything a water drop can mean, and it reminded him of his dream to become part of someone's personal story. So as the surfer paddled past, the little drop clung onto the surfer's curly hair as if his life depended on it, and together they took course towards the sand. The little drop was fascinated by the view from up here. For the first time, he got to not just hear the children playing in the whitewash, he got to see them too. He saw plenty of his molecule friends giggling as they were being splashed around. And in the distance, surfers were taking turns riding waves, set after set. The little drop felt an overwhelming sense of pride. How beautiful and flawless is the symbiosis, until the glow started to diminish. From this perspective, he slowly started noticing the darker things. Waste covering the water surface looking like a blanket, a result of the storm from a previous night. A beach packed with remains and people moving past them without care. Garbage seemed to be everywhere, and the closer the little water drop got carried to the shore, the more horrified he became. Why didn't I just stay where I was comfortable? He sighed, looking out into the ocean. It was much easier not to know the truth. And just as this thought slipped through his mind, the sun had secretly made its impact. The little drop got lifted up into the air, dissolving and gradually moving away from the heaviness. Sitting on a fuzzy cloud, he grasped a new perspective on this perfectly imperfect unity of the human and the sea. Volunteers mindfully collecting waste off the beach, piece by piece. People filling rubbish cans instead of dropping items on the sand. Now I'm glad I took the leap, the little water drop thought happily. Change ought to be created after all, and it starts with curiosity. Ocean pollution is a significant and persistent problem caused primarily by human activities, both on land and at sea. The pollution enters the ocean through littering, runoff, poor waste management, and extreme weather events, as well as from point sources like oil spills. Marine debris, including plastics and abandoned fishing gear, harms marine life, damages habitats, and even impacts human health through contaminated seafood. Garbage patches formed in ocean gyres collect debris, further highlighting the widespread impact. Nutrient pollution caused by excess nitrogen and phosphorus leads to harmful algal blooms and dead zones, depleting oxygen and harming marine ecosystems. Addressing ocean pollution requires a multifaceted approach. Small individual and collective actions can trigger larger systemic change through social contagion. Where sustainable practices spread through communities, inspiring others to adopt similar behaviors. As individuals and organizations learn by doing, solutions such as waste reduction, proper recycling, and local cleanup efforts become more efficient and effective, creating economies of scale that lower costs and increase accessibility. Over time, these efforts can achieve a critical mass where enough people and systems adopt sustainable behaviors to form a positive tipping point, shifting society toward a new steady state of reduced ocean pollution. By fostering collective action, spreading awareness, and scaling up solutions, we can tip the balance and create a cleaner, healthier ocean for future generations. Navigating the mental challenges of ocean pollution can feel daunting, especially when the scale of the problem seems overwhelming. But the key is to focus not on the magnitude of the issue, but on the positive steps we can take, both individually and together. Every small action, whether reducing plastic use, supporting sustainable businesses, or advocating for policy changes, contributes to a larger movement. We have to remind ourselves that change doesn't always happen overnight, but with persistence, hope, and collaboration, we can make a real difference. The ocean is our partner. Let's start treating it as such.
We stick with the perspective. Hannah Heinzmann tells the story of another droplet, Instead of observing the world from above, her droplet experiences a journey through the rivers and wetlands of the world, making new friends, but also meeting powerful opponents that endanger the little droplet and its surroundings.
The story of a water droplet, a journey of life, transformation, and hope by Hannah Heitzmann. I am a droplet tucked away deep within the earth. My world is dark and quiet. My companions are the minerals that cradle me. I am not yet the water you see in rivers or taste on your lips. I am potential, waiting. Down here, I feel the weight of the earth pressing on me, shaping me, whispering that my time will come. For eons I wait, weaving through cracks and caverns, dissolving salts and ancient whispers of stone. In this stillness, I gather strength, preparing for the moment when I will break free. And then, I feel it. A pull, a surge. The earth sighs, and I rise. I burst into the light, a spring carrying me to the surface. I glisten in the sunlight, finally free from the embrace of the earth. Cool air rushes over me, and for the first time I feel alive. I tumble down the rocks, joining other droplets like me. Together we laugh as we cascade into a stream, our voices forming a song. I twist and twirl around pebbles, darting between roots and embracing the soil. I feel myself nourishing tiny plants, quenching the thirst of all beings. I am life, moving and giving. My journey takes me everywhere. I join rivers that flow strong and steady, racing toward vast lakes and oceans. I evaporate into mist, rising high into the sky where I become part of a cloud, a new form of me. The wind carries me far, and when I return to earth as rain, I splash joyfully onto leaves, soaking into the soil once more. Every part of me is alive. I flow through veins of trees, become part of the fruits they bear, and even course through the hearts of animals. With each step of my journey, I collect stories. I am part of all I touch. One day, my journey takes a dark turn. I flow into a place I do not recognize. Pipes and machines that churn and hum. Something clings to me, sharp and strange, and I cry out. "What are you?" I ask, struggling against these new companions. "We are progress," they reply, though their voices feel heavy. "We are the cost of making things in the Anthropocene. They are chemicals, oils, and waste, things that twist my essence. I carry them unwillingly, and as I return to the rivers, I feel different. The fish I once danced with shy away, and plants wither where I touch them. My heart aching. I feel burdened, tainted, no longer the life giver I once was. I see others like me, droplets weighed down by the same uninvited companions. Together, we flow into lakes, into oceans, into bodies of creatures who cannot avoid us. Some grow sick, others die, and I feel the weight of their pain. Yet even as I despair, I see glimmers of hope. I flow into a wetland where tall reeds sway and murmur, "We can help you." They filter out some of the darkness clinging to me, letting me breathe again. Trees take me in, lifting me toward the sky where sunlight purifies me. I rise into the clouds, shedding my burdens as I transform once more. When I return to earth as rain, I am lighter, cleaner, and hopeful. My life changes again when humans begin to understand me. When I am no longer contained but celebrated, a companion in beauty. They treat me as life itself, a sacred bond between humans and the earth. They make me see that I am a source of strength and a symbol of humility. To them, I become a reminder that every life, no matter how small, is interconnected. You are more than progress, a voice murmurs one day as I flow through a hiker's canteen. You are life itself. I start to see more hands, human hands, joining in the effort. They build ponds with care, where sunlight, plants, and time help me to let go of my unwanted companions.
an ancient process now scaled to heal entire watersheds. They protect the wetlands and forests that heal me. I meet other troubles who share the same story. The burden shed and balance restored. I flow into villages where children laugh and splash in my streams. Their joy rippling through me as if it could wash away my sorrows. I am drawn into the hands of farmers using me to quench the thirst of their crops. In the cities, I find myself welcomed into homes, filling glasses and pots. There's a calmness I give, a balm that softens burdens. It's rain. I watch people tilt their faces toward me, smiling as I fall. It's snow. I blanket the earth in stillness, inviting quiet reflection. I bring life to the deserts, song to the forests, and unity to communities gathered by rivers and lakes. It is then I realize that while my journey is not always easy, it is worth it. For every shadow I carry, I find light in the hearts of those who cherish me. Now, as I continue my endless journey, I know I carry more than just minerals and memories. I carry hope. I am part of a cycle that holds the ability to heal itself. A reminder that even when burdened, I can find my way back. To the souls of this world I whisper, care for me and I will care for you. And so I keep flowing, always moving, always changing.
Care for me and I will care for you. A sentence to remember this program on the topic of water-related challenges due to climate crisis by. We will end this radio piece with Wait in the Water from Ramsey Lewis. We'll be right back. That's it for our show for Radio Micro Europa on Wüstewelle 96.6. Technical assistance, Valentin Sturm. Today's authors, Torben Grorock, Gabriel Bretzinger, Tabitha Singer, Xongi Masia, Noelia Ortiz, Helen Burkhardt and Hannah Heinzmann. Editor, Leonie Schwarz. The program was produced as part of the climate editorial team of the Center for Media Competence under the direction of Kurt Schneider. Thank you all for listening so far. I am Chiara Fabian-Gehrig and I say goodbye until the next time.